Good morning, and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco, a reporter with the Public Health New Mexico Project. And today we're talking about behavioral health in the state. The last couple of years have seen New Mexico in a tailspin after a shakeup in 2013 left providers and families scrambling to fill the gaps. But earlier this month, Attorney General Hector Balderas cleared 10 more of the 15 providers accused of Medicaid fraud. That means only two remain under investigation. Do you have a story of the mental health and substance abuse treatment health systems affecting you or someone you care about? Listeners, we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 277-5866 if you're in Albuquerque, or toll free at 877-899-5866. Nancy Jo Archer was the CEO of Hogadas Incorporated, which had existed for decades helping young people and their families. When the state halted Medicaid funds to the agencies, Hogadas hung on for several months, but then had to shut its doors. Good morning, Nancy Jo.
Good morning.
First of all, give us some background on Hogadas. Who did you serve and what kind of work did you do there?
Sure. Well, Hogadas was founded 43 years ago to serve troubled adolescents. And it expanded over the years to serve children and youth who had serious emotionally SED, which is called serious emotionally disturbance, or kids with substance abuse or child abuse backgrounds. It had a variety of services. It had about six different programs in which to serve these youth, so a youth could come and actually receive just about any service they needed through Hogadas.
Now, when you were charged with Medicaid fraud, was there anything that you could do about it?
No, we were not given it. Well, that's not quite true. We were given the option to write a letter of good intent, which meant that if they approved, they could continue to provide services. None of us were approved. We all wrote the letters and none of us were approved. But we were not granted a fair hearing. We were not also informed as to what the allegations were. So until the Attorney General and the state released their reports, we didn't know what the accusations were.
Now, what happened to the staff and what happened to the clients?
Diverse happenings. We were taken over by an organization from Arizona, so some of the staff remained with that organization. Other staff were let go. Other staff elected not to stay with the organization. Hopefully, most of them are employed, as Albuquerque is much larger than some of the rural areas where there was much more difficulty when this occurred. The clients, that's diverse also. Some of the clients continued with Hogadas. Some of the programs have been made a little smaller, so there are not as many being served. And some elected to not continue with Hogadas.
Now, what was it like to hear that the AG had cleared Hogadas of those fraud charges?
Oh, my gosh. I can't even begin to tell you. It was like a heavy cloud had been lifted. All of us have had that burden now for 2 years because it took so long. The process took so long. Thank goodness for Hector Balderas because he expedited the process. He hired extra staff and made sure that he made this a priority so that it could happen more quickly, and it did. Because regardless of the outcome, we were just hanging there, you know, with not knowing what was going to happen. So elation would be a mild statement.
Now, Hogadas had to close. You hung on for several months, but then you had to close. So
yes.
Was it also a little bit bittersweet?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There'll be no more Hogadas.
KUNM contacted the governor's office and the Human Services Department several times, hoping someone could be on the show today, but they didn't respond. Now, Generation Justice is a local youth media organization that produces a show you've probably heard on this station. Generation Justice has been interviewing New Mexicans about some of these impacts and kindly let us use clips from the segments they produced throughout the hour. Here's UNM student Sam Innes, a behavioral health consumer.
It's really difficult to find helpful resources in New Mexico for mental health. It was hard for me because I wanted to trust my providers, but I couldn't develop a relationship with them because either I was with them for too short a time or they didn't want to listen to me. We're sometimes very fragile, especially you are at your most vulnerable when you're seeking help.
That's Sam Innes speaking as part of Generation Justice's New Mexico Speaks Crisis Campaign. Have you been impacted by the behavioral health shakeup? Join the conversation. Did you have to switch agencies? Or maybe you're a staff member at one of those nonprofits. We want to hear from you. You can give us a call at 277-5866 if you're in Albuquerque, or toll free at 877-899-5866. We've got Lauren Reichelt, the Health and Human Services Director in Rio Arriba County, here today too to talk about the need for continuing funding in her part of the state. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning, Marissa.
Before we get to the state budget issues, Rio Arriba County has one of the highest heroin overdose death rates in the country and has for years. The highest. Can you tell us about the effects of the shakeup in Rio Arriba?
Well, yes, I can. Primarily, I think the ones who were impacted the worst were children and youth in Rio Arriba County, and that's because we had three providers, two youth providers and an adult provider. PMS, the provider of adult services in our community, had enough funding in order to keep their services going, although they were scaled back a bit. But youth services were completely disrupted. So the kind of stories I heard from the schools were that there were a few things that happened. One was that a number of people who were receiving services just fell out of the system or were dropped entirely. But at the same time that this shakeup occurred, services were also cut back. So there were a number, quite a large number of youth in the schools who were receiving something called behavioral management services, and they had about 20 hours of service a week, and that was suddenly cut back to two or three. And so for some of these youth who are coming from homes where maybe their parents were not involved because they were using, they really needed that 20 hours of time. So a lot of those kids just kind of fell by the wayside. And, you know, the reason it was such a huge impact for us is in the Espanola School District, about 60% of the children are being raised by their grandparents. 60% of the children that are being raised, or the grandparents that are raising grandchildren in Rio Arriba, are living in poverty because there's so little support and they're on fixed incomes. So they really needed that extra help. And those are kind of Uganda-like statistics from the height of the HIV epidemic. So it's shocking, but we've never really been able, although the two new providers have been fairly active in our community, they mainly serve only Medicaid clients, and the referrals come from Medicaid. So we used to meet very frequently. We still have a very robust health council, and we had a behavioral health task force that would frequently meet. We would exchange referrals and talk about gaps in services. It took a long time to rebuild that task force. I think the month after that shakeup, we went from 25 or 30 people sitting around a table to nobody sitting around the table. And now we're back to 25 or 30 people, but there's still a very noticeable gap in terms of youth services.
All right, we're going to take a call from Nancy in Albuquerque. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
What's your question?
I actually have three. They've been partly answered, but I'd like to know more. What services have totally gone away? The second is, besides the BMS services, what services are hard to access? And of those, do you know the reasons why they are hard to access?
Nancy Jo, do you have an answer for exactly what services have kind of disappeared since the behavioral health shakeup?
Well, they've all been diminished. And, you know, in some counties, they went for a period of time with absolutely no services because the Arizona companies left and they were left with no one in their communities to be able to pick up the gap. I think some of that is being remedied now. So it depends on the area of the state. Some of the agencies in the state were the only resource in that community. And for them to be shut down was devastating for those communities. And one of the factors that, and I'm sorry, I don't remember your name.
Lauren.
That you touched on, which I think is critical, is there's a trust factor that was disrupted. And it was a trust factor for our clients. It was a trust factor for the communities. And as a result, the whole system became disrupted. I would agree that BMS is probably the most service, the service that is most impacted by the changes.
This is Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham, and I'm delighted to be with this panel today. I think to maybe make it more concrete, because we get calls in our office every single day, there are no counseling services. There are no case management services. There are no substance abuse prevention services. There are no substance abuse treatment services without waiting lists in whole counties like Doña Ana County. Their counseling team are no longer taking new patients. There are insufficient psychiatrists. There are insufficient psychologists. There's been no infrastructure. So we were building that, and the providers that you're hearing from were some of the most reputable, respected, accessible, comprehensive places, so that you didn't have to go one place for counseling, one place for a psychiatrist. You had a behavioral health medical home. That's completely gone, not just eroded. There's none of that. And I'll tell you the other significant issue is there are insufficient crisis or residential beds for treatment and support. So there are not enough geriatric psychiatric beds. There is no acute residential treatment for adolescents anywhere in the state. And there are a variety of communities that on their own are trying to build and address them. And right now, the Bernalillo County Commission is trying to put together a comprehensive plan to administer behavioral health services in this county.
Let me just interrupt with one more comment. There was a memo that was just released that in Las Cruces, they're limiting their outpatient services to one 15-minute unit a month.
So I'm just going to say again that we're talking behavioral health on the KUNM Collins Show today. We have Nancy Jo Archer of Hugadas, who you just heard, also Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham, and Lauren Reichelt of Health and Human Services Director in Rio Arriba County. We have an email comment come in from Elizabeth. She says she moved from northern New Mexico to Albuquerque in 2014, and that was when her teenager started showing signs of depression. She tried for months to get her kid in with mental health experts. It took 5 months, and she had to pay $350 in cash because the psychiatrist didn't take insurance. But it was a little too late, and her team had already started self-medicating. She says she often thinks that things would be different if she had been able to get care for her kid early on when it was crucial. Okay, so I'm going to move on a little bit, and we're going to talk about other impacts around New Mexico. One of the places that these ripples of the behavioral health shakeup were felt was in the criminal justice system. Police pick up more people who need treatment. The jails have become the de facto treatment centers, and the courts aren't sure where to send folks for help. Lauren, have you seen this more of this kind of thing up in Rio Arriba County?
Well, yes, we've been seeing this in Rio Arriba County. I've been working there 22 years, and we've been seeing it for 22 years. Recently, the New York Times published some maps of the opioid overdose epidemic and how it's traveled across the United States. And what really struck me about these maps was 1998 wasn't even on the map. If you could have seen 1998, Rio Arriba would have been the only red spot. And it was about that time that it was announced that Rio Arriba led the entire country in heroin overdose deaths. And at the time, the response was to want to build a wall around the border, and it was really a very heavy militaristic and police response. And in Rio Arriba, we said, no, this is an epidemic. And part of the reason we said that was I spent about 3 weeks in the office of the medical investigator reading through 10 years of records. And what I noticed was, first of all, an awful lot of reports of people who had become addicted because they had had some kind of an accident and they were prescribed painkillers. And then when they ran out of painkillers, they started taking heroin. And another thing that I noticed was that when the death rate jumped up, it was in 1998, the year after four local physicians who were over-prescribing Valium and Librium had their prescription rights revoked. So what we've done in Rio Arriba County is we've really tried to push a public health approach and to treat this as an epidemic and to create a whole range of services. We trained 100% of our Española police officers in crisis intervention. We got them 40-hour certificates, and so far we've trained 80% of the Rio Arriba sheriff's department. And I'm really proud of that because most large cities haven't managed to do that. And so what we'll be having them do is our county is too big to send a mobile crisis response unit everywhere, but the police are able to pick up people who are in crisis and drop them off at the Española Hospital, and we're all holding our breaths to see how those cuts are going to affect us, because one of the potential services on the chopping block is, as of April, we were going to have PMS respond at the hospital after the police dropped these individuals
off. And what Lauren is demonstrating is this has become a local response issue in its entirety, and that is not how healthcare services, including behavioral health services, are required to be provided. And as a result, more than a third of New Mexico individuals who are either jailed or in prison are in an active behavioral health slash, it's usually in addition, substance abuse treatment program. So what we're doing is we're requiring, in order to get treatment for these issues, these healthcare issues, is we're sending you to jail and prison. And I'll tell you, we're paying for that, of course, at the local level, which means there's no local funding to do any of the necessary health and welfare for any of those other citizens. And it's completely unfair to a disenfranchised population whose only access to care is through the criminal justice system.
Well, we're also playing a reverse game of whack-a-mole. So what happens is we work really hard locally, often in concert with our congressional delegation or with our local legislative delegation, to get new services up to fill gaps, like, for example, detox. And then all of the sudden, a service will go under. So you cannot access a full range of treatment easily. So, for example, if somebody wants to get into treatment, first they have to go through detox. It used to be, as of like 2 months ago, that my case managers would get a bed for them at Taos Detox, drive them, get them the medical clearance, drive them to Taos, arrange for a bed to open up at OI in Rio Riba County 8 days after, get another medical medical clearance, drive them back down to OI, and then they could complete their stay at OI. Well, Taos Detox went under, so there's no detox. So that means that people can't really easily get into OI either, plus they cannot use my services because I have nobody to refer them to.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about local response and the budget in just a minute. We're talking about behavioral health in New Mexico today. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco, with KUNM's Public Health New Mexico Project. We're going to take a quick break.
Edible Arrangements at 4770 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast in Albuquerque offers fresh fruit bouquets and chocolate-dipped fruit for any occasion. EdibleArrangements.com or 505-888-0100. Edible Arrangements is a valued supporter of KUNM.
Support comes from the Santa Fe Waldorf School, hosting the New Nature Movement with Last Child in the Woods author Richard Louv, February 21st, 7 p.m. Presented by the Journey School, tickets at the Lenzik Center for Performing Arts.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. Nancy Jo Archer of Hogares is here today, along with Lauren Reichelt, Health and Human Services Director in Rio Arriba County. So let's, and also U.S. Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham is here too. So let's talk about exactly what happened in 2013. In the behavioral health shakeup. Michelle Lujan Grisham, do you want to get into that?
Yeah, I really appreciate that because New Mexico, it's really important for New Mexicans to understand this and to weigh in. In 2013, the governor and the Human Services Department shut down every single 100% of the behavioral health service providers in Medicaid. It's the only state in the nation where that's ever occurred. They used language in the Affordable Care Act that said that you had to respond to any reasonable allegation of fraud. And for the last 2 years, consumers, activists, providers who are no longer able to do a business because you lose your Medicaid funding, you can't make payroll, you can't continue. The federal government and the state government, I think, are culpable in creating a dynamic where we've got more people in prison, more people without services, higher suicide rates, and we're second in overdose deaths in the nation. It's outrageous. The federal government requires certain aspects of administration under Medicaid, and I don't believe that they've made those occur in this state, including requiring that we have data so that you can see exactly the root causes, who's culpable for what. And after 2 years of the entire federal delegation, both parties pushing both the state and the federal government, including requiring the federal government to be on site in New Mexico for roundtables, consumer meetings, provider meetings, meetings with the state, hearings on the Hill about this very issue, very little has been done by the federal government. I'll tell you what I think. I think it's time to declare a state of emergency. And when the state has the power to do that in a variety of ways, including deciding that this epidemic, Lauren, is a public health emergency, which means then there would be federal matching funds to reinvest in our infrastructure. And I'm going to encourage every local community, every county, every city to declare their own states of emergency, even if it's by resolution, and start to kind of put the pressure here to solve this problem. And lastly, we're all introducing legislation. I'm leading with legislation that would require that the federal government, it's a blame game. The state did it. The state has total authority. Nobody will touch it. So here we're going to be very prescriptive. In this situation, you will be required to assure continuity of care. You will have tools in your box, including monitors and program managers that would come into the state so that this never, ever can happen to any state or any community everywhere again, and there will be no fighting. It will be clear in statute just exactly what needs to happen.
Now, behavioral health providers are calling for an investigation, and you've been saying something similar. Why do you think there should be an investigation, and who do you think should do it?
Yeah, I'm talking too much, so I'm in a shift. But quickly, there was no due process, right? Mm-hmm. If there was a real investigation, you wouldn't have the attorney general 2 years later saying there isn't anything here that would indicate there's any credible allegations of fraud or any other wrongdoing. There was no investigation. There was a declaration, and that's the issue in its entirety. Nobody did anything except to decide they didn't want these providers in business anymore.
I would just like to add to that that there we know, and we have emails and other correspondence to back this up, that the state and Arizona were in communication a year before the actual debacle occurred. So they were planning this. We know that they went to Arizona, including the auditors, the state, to visit with the Arizona companies prior to the audit. We know that they committed to coming into New Mexico prior to the audit. The audit itself actually said there was no credible allegations of fraud. That was redacted by HSD. We have the original audit that shows that. And yet, HSD took that information and elected to declare that 15 of us had committed fraud with no ability to have any fair hearing or find out what the accusations were.
So that's Nancy Jo Archer, the former CEO of Hogares, which was forced to close after the 2013 behavioral health shakeup. We're going to take a call from Clifton in Albuquerque. Good morning, Clifton.
Good morning. I think I'm going to change my question. Representative Lujan did a pretty good job of answering who is culpable and suggesting some ways that we can restructure and get the program back in line. So I guess my question now is, what does your panel suggest that those of us listening do to help accomplish all of this, especially in wake of the Ethics Committee being not passed in this recent legislation?
Well, I really appreciate your statement and your question. I would definitely call your city councilors, call your county commissioners, and particularly if you're calling as an Albuquerque, Bernalillo County resident, you know, the Bernalillo County is putting together a $17 million investment to address two things. One, to identify those critical core services that we need to address immediately. So triaging and getting that done. But in addition, creating a foundation for a brand new behavioral health infrastructure, because that's been completely eroded. They're taking advice from constituents, because I will tell you that in this debate about who did what to whom, we've lost sight of consumers and their families have been absolutely harmed. And the state as a whole has lost access to the kind of health care providers that make a meaningful system even viable. And so I would really encourage you to do that. And I will tell you that your entire congressional delegation has also sent just yesterday another letter calling for another federal investigation into this matter.
Nancy Jo, what do you hope would come out of an investigation?
The big question that has never been addressed is why. Why did this occur? And that's still, I think people would like to have an answer as to why. I think that there's an issue of justice in this that needs to be addressed. We would hope that maybe there could be some restitution to the program so that they could actually run again. So that could be the outcome of an investigation.
Yeah, the other thing that I know, we're all so passionate about this because we're really upset. This is wrong in this state. It's wrong any place in the world, but particularly right here, right now. The other thing about an investigation is that you would identify what needs to occur if you have a real problem so that you've got continuity of care and a transition plan that's meaningful. If you have a real problem and you're placing those protections on the consumers and then you would actually have recourse and accountability for those officials who made those decisions, potentially without having any of it be fact-based.
All right. We're going to take a call from Peter in Albuquerque. Peter, can you hear me?
Hello. Thank you for letting me participate. I want to start by thanking Congresswoman Lujan Grisham for being a champion for people with disabilities. This is a difficult situation. I appreciate you for doing it. I want to say that the question of why did the Martinez administration do this really is important. And I want to tell you that 7 years ago, when I was in Las Cruces, I talked to a colleague who heard the district attorney down there, Susana Martinez, tell a public meeting that she didn't believe in providing treatment to adolescents who get in trouble, that she thought if they did a crime, they should do the time. And so she explicitly said at that time, when she was still the DA down there, that she would like to prosecute the local behavioral health providers for Medicaid fraud. Well, we can all see that a few years later, when she became governor, she did exactly what she set out to do back when she was a politician running for governor. So I am asking what could be done to get the federal government to really initiate some action, because, frankly, we're going to get these declarations of emergency. But Congresswoman Lujan Grisham brought out people from the federal government bureaucracy some years ago to hold these public meetings, and they didn't do anything. And so is there anything that can be done through the federal government that we haven't yet tried to get them to actually look into what looks to me like fraud?
Yeah, they definitely, Peter, it's Michelle Lujan Grisham, have the power to look at fraud, particularly, as you know, in the Medicaid or Medicare program. But their interpretation, at least to my office today, is that it's an all-or-nothing effort. So if they're looking at and they find anything, which is outrageous because that's their job, so I've got a real accountability problem with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS. This is the federal arm, federal Health and Human Services agencies. They believe today that they have to completely defund Medicaid if there are any issues, and that that is too draconian a response to the state. Now, I say if that's really occurring, that it's rife with fraud anywhere in the country, they have to take it over just the way the Department of Justice takes over corrections issues, educational issues, long-term care issues, and put you under a consent decree, the police department, until that is right and those risks to the public are completely gone, not just mitigated, gone. So we are in a constant debate with them about what resources and tools they have to make us accountable, including continuity of care and transition. And so that's why, Peter, I'm introducing legislation, because it seems to me that any federal administration could take this position, that they have insufficient tools to warrant both an investigation or any accountability measures. And we're going to make that very prescriptive about what they have to do. And we're going to continue to ask the Department of Justice to look at this from a civil rights perspective. But so far, we have not gotten them to agree to take these cases or this investigation.
Now, Lauren, do you have anything to add to that?
I do. In my position, I am not really able to make anything right, but what I like to do is I try to make things work in Mira Riba, and I really love the Congresswoman's suggestion about getting resolutions out of our local governments, and I think you probably could consider a resolution gotten out of Rio Riba.
I'm happy.
And I will work with my fellow health council coordinators all over the state to see if we can get resolutions. Because whatever happened, I am unable to do anything about it, really. But what I can do is I can try and build a treatment system that actually works in my county. And I'm sure that there are other counties who can do the same. And so moving forward with a resolution like that gives us a way to at least try to move forward from here to build the kind of behavioral health system that we need.
Now, Nancy Jo, you've been talking about an investigation, too. Do you have any sense of what could be done to get something moving right now in terms of looking into what happened in 2013?
I think that our only hope is to have the efforts Michelle Lujan Grisham is making. I think it's going to have to come from a federal level. And what we're hoping is that we can get enough buy-in from the state and the communities to push for an investigation that it really occurs.
Because otherwise, if we don't do that and have what we need, including, I really want listeners to know this, the federal government is, in fact, required to get Medicaid utilization data. So I'm probably not being very clear. That means as a Medicaid consumer, every time I touch the healthcare system, that the payers, the state and the federal government, know about that, right? They just want to make sure that we're utilizing it in a way that we ought to be. Well, when we expanded Medicaid with healthcare reform, the Human Services Department in New Mexico under the Martinez administration has only provided aggregate data about new individuals inside Medicaid, making the argument that they have continued to increase services. Mm-hmm. The federal government should, can, and I read the law as is required to get that deaggregated and to be very clear about who's getting what and what the gaps are. And they are not requiring them to do that. And HSD is not, Human Services in the state is not providing it. And so at a minimum, these investigations also would require that that data be provided so that we know.
I would totally agree with the Congresswoman on that. This is Lauren again. Because what we experience in Rio Riba, where we have a very active commission that has been active for several decades, so we have a more robust system probably than many rural counties. What we've experienced are extreme gaps, and every time you fill one gap, another gap pops up again. And so being required to look at those gaps is really important because you can't have a system if you have those gaps.
Okay. Do you think there should be an investigation in the 2013 behavioral health shakeup? Call us and let us know. Who should conduct it? The federal government? An independent commission? Call now 277-5866 in Albuquerque or toll free long distance 877-899-5866. We're going to take a call from Sarah in Albuquerque. Good morning, Sarah. Hello?
Yes. This is Sarah Lee. I'm president and CEO of Samaritan Counseling Center here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The reason why I'm calling in, the real tragedy are for the families, the mm-hmm. children, the youth, the most fragile families that really need services. We know that the closure of these agencies had a ripple effect. We had people, a few calling us, outside our area, just saying, I need help. Can you get me in? Because they really needed those services. And we're an outpatient counseling center. We know that in Bernalillo County, 151,000 people are in need of mental health services. Only 98,000 receive services. Therefore, there's a huge gap of 53,000 people just in Bernalillo County, not even to mention the state, that are receiving no services. And so we have a real crisis on our hands to really find a comprehensive solution to this problem. And I agree with what all the panelists have said. If you just provide sort of crisis services, then you don't have a smooth handoff when they need lesser services. And so, you know, you need the whole continuum of care, or else you just continue to cycle back. And people, you know, if they don't have good outpatient services, they can deteriorate, and then all of a sudden it becomes a crisis. And so to have a spectrum and continuity of care is going to be absolutely essential in rebuilding this behavioral health system.
Thank you so much for calling in today, Sarah. We're talking about mental health and substance abuse treatment today. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and I'm Marisa DeMarco. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
I named my last car Pearl. We sometimes become very attached to our cars, so when it comes time to let go, we're really honored when you donate your car or truck to KUNM. If you're about to get a new ride, consider donating your old one for a tax deduction and a KUNM membership. It's kind of like keeping your Pearl in your life in the form of great radio. To see if your vehicle qualifies, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
If you're getting a new car this year, consider giving the old one to KUNM as a 50th anniversary gift. In addition to our sincere gratitude, you'll get a hefty tax deduction and a KUNM membership just in time for those 50th anniversary celebrations. Donated cars and trucks are a big reason we've been able to reach this milestone year, for real. So call today to see if your car or truck qualifies. 888-KUNM-CAR, that's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Marisa DeMarco, and we're talking about behavioral health in New Mexico. Joining us today are Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham, Nancy Jo Archer, former CEO of Hogares, and Lauren Reichelt, Health and Human Services Director in Rio Arriba County. KUNM contacted the Human Services Department and the Governor's Office to talk about behavioral health services with us on the show today, but they both declined to comment. We're going to shift gears just a little bit right now and talk about the state's funding for behavioral health services in New Mexico. So while we're having this conversation this morning, lawmakers are watching the final hours of the session drain away. They passed a budget bill late last night. There was talk of taking money from behavioral health and other places to balance the budget. Lauren Weichelt, do we know yet what happened with behavioral health money?
Not really. I've gotten two different reports. One that the budget was increased by $2 million and the other that it was cut by $3.9 million. I think the latter report is probably the correct one. And initially, the proposed cuts were $8.1 million. And I did go to the legislature with 200 of my closest friends from all over Rio Arriba, Taos, and Santa Fe counties, and some flags and candles. And we went to the Senate Finance Committee to tell them our opinion about those cuts. So I'm really glad that at least there was some effect and that the amount of cut was reduced, but it's still going to be devastating to our state and to our community.
So what kind of impacts are you talking about in Rio Arriba County for budget cuts?
Okay, well, some of the items that were slated potentially to be cut were the mobile crisis response unit that I talked about. So in that case, we've trained all of our police officers to drop individuals in crisis off at the hospital where nothing happens and they're released. The behavioral health investment zone was one that potentially, according to BHSD, could have been cut. And so that's $500,000 to create a coordinated care system. So that means we would just hire people to do it and install the software, and then nothing would happen. Transitional living was on the list, supported living. These are really necessary services for people who are trying to continue their recovery. So, and also increased Medicaid reimbursement for behavioral health providers so that they can break even providing the service.
So why, and you've touched on this before, but why is there such a great need in your part of the state?
Well, there's such a great need because we are at the epicenter of a national epidemic. So we lead the nation in heroin overdose deaths. We have very high rates of opioid overdose deaths. And that masks other behavioral health issues as well.
Okay, we're going to take a call from Daryl in Rio Rancho. Good morning, Daryl.
Good morning. What my statement's all about is, okay, I'm 58 years old. My house has been in and out of foreclosure, and this type of stuff. I can't find a job with living wage. That adds stress to my, you know, mental health. It if you're not working, you're stressing out. You're self-medicating. It adds a lot of stress. And if we could deal with the employment thing in New Mexico, if people can get a living wage, I'm sure that mental health would become a lot better. I know this in my case.
So we have been talking a lot about how many of these things are tied together, right? So criminal justice system, and now we're talking about the economy and how all of this is tied to behavioral health. Nancy Jo, do you have some thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's all tied in. I think one of the reasons our behavioral health needs are so great in New Mexico for children, and this doesn't address his issue, although I think his issue is really germane, is that we lead the nation in child well-being, the poorest nation in the country in child well-being. That leads to all kinds of mental health issues. And so having that, unless we begin to address in a comprehensive way all the needs, including employment, housing, et cetera, then we're never going to completely address the mental health needs.
No, and Daryl, I cheated with and got Lauren to defer to me. That's what you get to do when you're a U.S. congresswoman. You can get folks on the panel.
It's also
defer.
What you can do when you're Michelle Lujan Grisham.
Okay, fair enough. We've got a long work history, and I really think these two women are dynamite and do their priorities have always been right. It's focused on the consumer. Daryl. I'm going to give you my phone number. I want you to call my office. Let's see if we can't do more on the foreclosure issues. Don't know where those are. And see if we can't help navigate to a variety of services. And I want to be very clear and fair that the foreclosure in this situation is likely to be easier to address, not always solvable, than the behavioral health issues. But let's do everything we can. We work for you. Our phone number is 346-6781, 346-6781. And I hope we hear from you, Daryl. Thank you for your courage.
Okay, we're going to hear another clip from a segment produced by Generation Justice, the youth media organization that's been documenting the shortage in behavioral health services. This is Jerry Holland, service coordinator for New Life Homes.
It was really hard for me to find services that were available. There sometimes is like a 3-month wait to get in. And I mean, if somebody is experiencing a crisis in their life and they're trying to, you know, find treatment, to make them wait that long is just, it's ridiculous.
We want to hear from you today, too. What does a delay in services mean to you? Is there enough mental health and substance abuse treatment out where you are? How could the system be improved? Okay, Lauren, you've been waiting to talk. What do you want to say?
I have. I've been waving my hands. Well, what I wanted to say, I really appreciated that last caller and the Congresswoman's response. But what I wanted to say was that in Rio Riba County, we've seen a sharp increase in unemployment in the last few years. I don't know the exact percentage, but the only segment of our economy that is actually growing is healthcare. Healthcare makes up 25% of the wages in Rio Riba County, and it continues to increase. So by investing in healthcare, you're actually investing in the economy, and you're preventing that cycle of foreclosures. If you're talking, as I believe we are in this legislative session, about a budget cut of approximately $300 or $350 million to take place over a 5-month period between now and June 30th, you're talking about the loss of a whole lot of jobs in our state. So if we continue to do that and we don't look at ways to increase revenue, and there are multiple ways to increase revenue, taxes is not the only solution in New Mexico, but if we're not willing to look at that, we are going to throw our state into a depression, and then all of us who do provide behavioral health services are going to be even more overwhelmed than we already are.
Okay, we're going to take a call from Alan in Albuquerque. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I'm standing here. I'm just in a rage because of what's happened to what's happening to our healthcare system, especially with the youth. As of last year, on a given night in Albuquerque alone, there are over 20,000 homeless children who experience homelessness. I have talked I worked with Hogadis years ago. It was an incredible frontline bunch of people who were doing great work, understaffed and underpaid and under everything, and still were able to pull up, you know, do an incredible amount of good work. But I keep hearing Governor Martinez's name, and how can we more effectively get some changes to happen?
Okay, KUNM did contact the governor's office and the Human Services Department to talk about behavioral health services with us on this show today, but they both declined to comment. I want to talk about what it's going to take to make the behavioral health system strong again. So first of all, Lauren Reichelt, what do you think is next for behavioral health in New Mexico?
Well, what do I think is next, or what would I like to be next?
What would you like to be next?
Well, what I would like to be next is I would really like our legislature and our governor to look seriously at the problem of revenues. And because if the only way that you're going to resolve this problem of a budget deficit caused by the drop in oil prices is to cut services, you're going to decimate not only behavioral health services, but we're looking at steep cuts to our rural health clinics, or actually any indigent health care. We're looking at steep cuts to our hospitals, and that is going to impact us all around, not to mention cuts to education and other community services. So I guess what I would really like to see is a genuine coordinated care system where we work with communities and we develop, we fill those gaps in services, and we make it possible through changes in policy for people to easily navigate through those, through all the range of services they need, and that we also fund assistance navigating.
Okay, we're going to take a quick call from Hubert in Albuquerque. Good morning, Hubert.
Good morning. My name's Hubert, and I wanted to address the issue of the no-due process, because I had the same thing that Nancy Joe suffered over in Health and Human Services in the immunization program in the Department of Health. With no reason, they simply cut a contract with no due process. But here's the real problem. They also cut the quality assurance services from about 100% visiting of the clinics to just 25%. So just like we said in behavioral health, health, which is so important in driving our state's well-being and economy, is being cut by this administration left and right. So I hope Michelle Grisham can do something about that. We need due process when we get rid of local contractors. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Hubert. And Alan, I really appreciate your statement as well. We are in a crisis. So on the one hand, our oil and gas revenues, which is a mainstay revenue stream for the state, is at an all-time low. We've got 20-month to 24-month projections, both at the state level and at the federal level, about what is likely to occur in the energy market, in the oil market, that would give us a boost. And in the meantime, as you heard Lauren talk about from Rio Riba County, that we have the highest unemployment rates, not just in Rio Riba County, but the state has the highest unemployment rates in the country. So, number one, we need the state and the federal government working collectively, and we've asked the White House and I've asked Congress to look at a kind of like an emergency relief program that would really focus on the states that have not recovered in this economy since 2008, and to think about strategies regionally to just focus on the poorest states in the country. I think that's the responsibility of both the federal government and the state government. And the state government we're at a precipice. What are we going to do with the permanent fund? What revenues and what investments do we need to make to stabilize the financial bleeding in the state so that you have a chance in two places? Comprehensive healthcare system that meets our needs and an educational system that meets our needs. This is the way that you improve the quality of life for New Mexicans. And I think it's going to take all of us demanding that the state pay attention, the legislature pay attention, and I am going to do a shout out to your entire bipartisan delegation. We're clear, and we are all working together. Congress can be a little slow. We aren't taking that as an excuse. We're going to push them every single day until we get some relief in the state that makes a difference in our lives.
Okay, we're going to take one last call from Roberto in Albuquerque. Good morning, Roberto.
Good morning. My name is Roberto Vasquez. Thank you for taking my call. I've called the senators. I've called the Congress representatives, and it went to deaf ears several years ago. I have a sister that's has mental problems. Back when Reagan was around, he went and shut down these beautiful little satellite things we had here in the state. It was a great example of they were using us as an example of these little mental health centers. And then all at once it was closed down. Having my sister with a special mentally ill. Then all at once, I opened a business. I have a hair salon. And I started noticing when I put an application for a receptionist, I've seen all these doctors coming in, psychiatrists coming in, applying for jobs as receptionists. I'm going, what's wrong here? Then I find out that hearing somebody talking that they had closed all these facilities. And then next thing I know, I get all these break-ins in my business. I start noticing that they're dumping a lot of the people on this park on San Mateo, and they have these orange bands on. And I know they're all mental because I volunteered down at the mental health hospitals and stuff. And I started noticing a lot of the this morning I haven't slept because they broke into my business again. I've only been in my business 3 years. On this new location on San Mateo. I've been broken in 27 times. And every time I look at the video, it always seems to be these homeless people that, you know, there's no place for them to get their substance. There's no place for their health issues. And every time I try to do something, call the cities or the senators or the representatives, it goes to deaf ears. Even the attorney generals, they told me there's nothing you can do against Susana Martinez. I said, she's created fraud. You know, she brought this company from Arizona. They lasted a couple of months, took off with all the money.
Okay, Roberto, thank you so much for your call. Again, we're talking about the connections between all of these different issues in New Mexico. Nancy Jo Archer, what do you think needs to happen to get people help in New Mexico?
Oh, that is a wide open question. We need adequate funding. We need collaboration between the funders, actually, and the fundees and the managed care companies who also have a determinant role. We need to reinvest in our communities, and this is a poor time to say that because the state is in such straits financially. We need help from the congressional delegation to assist in this process, as well as our own legislature.
All right. Well, we're coming to the end of the hour today, and I want to point people to our website where you can find links to all of these organizations and our coverage of behavioral health in New Mexico. And check out the full NM Speaks Crisis campaign over at generationjustice.org. Thank you for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Nancy Jo Archer of Hogares, Lauren Reichelt, Health and Human Services Director for Rio Arriba County, and Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham. If you missed any of our program or if you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted to our website, KUNM.org, where you can also find previous call-in shows. Thanks to Roman Garcia, our engineer today. Kaveh Movahead screened your calls. Anna Landy live-tweeted the show and also helped select the audio clips we played. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. The show is part of KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project. It's funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and the Con Alma Health Foundation. I'm Marisa DeMarco. This is KUNM.